Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
And I'm Sonya Rappaport.
And today, we are back on track with the X-Men Animated Series.
Season 3.
The 27th episode overall, Out of the Past, Part 1. Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about with Back on Track, last week we reviewed X-Men 1, the movie, from 2000. And that was a fun diversion for us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little sidetrack.
Yeah. But now we're back to the cartoon in the real meat of the X-Men series. Season 3 has the most episodes of any season in the show. And it arguably has some of the most memorable arcs that we're going to come across.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other interesting little bits and facts. I might have mentioned this on a previous podcast, but we saw that Cal Dodd, the voice of Wolverine, said on Twitter that he and the other X-Men cast members of the voice cast knew that by season 3 the show was a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
So I had made the observation that I wonder if when we get to season 3, if we're going to see a little more pep and sort of subtlety out of the acting from the various voice actors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that remains to be seen.
I mean, it was only one episode. I don't really feel like the voice acting was noticeably different, which is not to say that it's not good. You know, it's great through seasons 1 and 2,
yes.
And I think so far it's continued into season 3, but I don't think it's really changed.
I just have this completely broad and general memory that the voice actors do get a little snappier, peppier, a little full of a bit more vim and vigor than they normally had. That just might be Cal Dodd's comment triggering that kind of weird response, but we're going to see as the season plays out. Yeah.
Yeah. I did notice the animation looks a little different
right.
in this episode to the last ones.
Well,
like a little heavier on the
inking.
Ink.
Right. Yeah. It looks a little inky. The shading is darker.
Yeah, well, more contrast, I would say.
Right.
Like more shadows and highlights and everything.
And some of the facial expressions, sometimes it looks really good, and other times it looks really bad in this episode.
Yeah.
So there's some close-ups on Wolverine's face in this episode that look straight out of a comic book, which is really cool.
Uh-huh.
But then sometimes you see facial expressions from other characters, be it Gambit or Jubilee. They don't look like they're drawn correctly. So I know that this season was plagued with animation errors,
mm-hmm.
and that I think it messed things up as far as the production order. So some episodes that were meant for season 3 actually ended up being shown in season 4, which we're going to notice with some big continuity problems coming later with the Phoenix Saga,
yeah.
more specifically. Well, really the end of the Dark Phoenix Saga.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I had to guess, without looking ahead, I'd say that this episode's an example of their animation errors that they had to go back and fix and change.
Mm.
I haven't watched ahead since we started this podcast,
yeah.
because I've wanted everything to seem as fresh as it has to me, as fresh as it possibly can be, as we watch these episodes, because I want to be as surprised as possible.
Yep.
You know, I've watched this series many times through, but the deeper we go, the less familiar I am with later episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't count season 3 in that group. I've seen season 3 a million times, but definitely seasons 4 and 5 I've seen the least amount of time straight through. So, just like, well, with me and you, it's like we don't want to watch ahead to really like see and give you. We want to be as surprised as you are. So, and we know there's people following along one episode at a time with us too, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, this episode, Out of the Past, Part 1. A brief recap of season 2. That season ended. The X-Men dealt with Mr. Sinister. They rescued Professor X and Magneto from the
Savage Land.
The Savage Land in Antarctica. And now I guess they're just back in New York, reunited. Although in this episode, you wouldn't really think so, because we only see 3 X-Men: Wolverine, Jubilee, Gambit. All 4, including Professor X.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't even see or get a hint of anyone else on the team.
Right.
So that's where this episode, it sort of begins with these characters. The episode really begins with we meet the Morlocks again,
mm-hmm.
from season 1. And Sonya, do you want to explain who the Morlocks are?
The Morlocks are the non-public mutants, basically. They live in old sewer and subway tunnels underground in New York City. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, powers like any
right.
mutants would, but they feel really, like, ostracized by society.
Right.
And so they've chosen to go underground, like, literally underground, to not have to, like, interact with normal people.
Right. I mean, the point being that many of them are too ghastly. There's what the Morlock we first see, Leech, he's like this Kermit the Frog-type mutant.
Mm-hmm.
And he even messages the X-Men later, Wolverine, and Wolverine makes a sort of a bigoted racist comment against him.
And he's like, oh, Storm has to be careful who she gives her number out to.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to even see the ugly side of Leech.
Oh, yeah, because it's a video phone.
Right, yeah, it's a video. The X-Men are playing, Gambit, Jubilee, and Wolverine are playing intense, like, shirts for skins basketball in the X-Mansion on a beautiful summer day.
This is, like, what I was talking about with the animation, though.
That scene looks
bad. The highlights and shadows are, like, really intense.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe it was done intentionally to make them look real sweaty, but, like, the highlights, the way they're drawn in, like, they look so shiny. Like,
it doesn't look weird. Right. Yeah, the shadows on their muscles, their muscles are so bulging that they cast incredibly dark shadows.
Right.
But we're jumping ahead a little bit.
Anyways, yeah. So they're on the video phone with Leech.
Well, it would go back a little bit. So,
okay.
I mean, the episode opens with Leech running away. He's got some kind of magical parcel in his hand.
Right.
And he's being chased by these cyborg people with laser guns. They're known as the Reavers, and they're seemingly Australian.
Yes.
And they're a bunch
of... No relation, though, right? To the Reavers of... what am I thinking
of? Firefly?
Firefly, yeah.
No, no relation. So Leech is running away from them. He's got something they want. These Reaver people, they're, like, really creepy... I want to say deformed cyborgs, but heavily enhanced cyborgs. They've got, like, just technology all over their skin. A lot of them don't just have robot limbs and arms.
Mm-hmm.
So
are they mutants also, though?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I know they're like a team of cyborgs.
I know, but like how Wolverine only managed to like survive the adamantium
right.
infusion because he's a mutant.
Right.
I was wondering if all these cyborg people are like that, like...
I don't think so. Again, someone in the Facebook group can correct us if we're wrong. I just think that they got their arms voluntarily chopped off and got robot arms attached. Or
yeah.
maybe they were, you know, maybe they amputees were soldiers or something. Or something. Yeah, amputees or soldiers that had experimental replacement technology.
Mm.
It's really a question of going on Wikipedia and looking it up. And I actually did. I looked up the Reaver Wikipedia page and my eyes kind of glazed over. I was like, I don't care. I mean, they're just sort of generic, like, robot villains.
Yeah.
We'll see them a few more times as the series progresses. I do appreciate the Australian accents.
Uh-huh.
Sonya and I have been enjoying this ridiculous reality show on Netflix called Aussie Gold Hunters.
Yep.
It seems like these people have some Western Australian accents, much like the Aussie Gold Hunters, who look for gold in their spare time mm-hmm. in Australia, braving the elements and snakes and things.
Right, with their metal detectors
right.
out there.
Very fun show.
In the bush.
Yeah, everyone should check it out. It was a blast. Let us know about Aussie Gold Hunters if you liked it. Anyway, Leech is running away from these Reavers. They're blasting at him. He runs into Callisto, the former leader of the Morlocks.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember from the episode when we last saw the Morlocks in season one, Storm had defeated Callisto in Darth Maul-esque lightsaber combat. I mean, Darth Maul-styled lightsaber.
Yeah.
Proto-lightsabers. They weren't lightsabers. They just looked like them. But they were just staffs with glowing, like, neon red tips.
Right.
And blue tips. So Storm defeated them, so she became leader of the Morlocks. And she sort of relinquished power back to Callisto and said that... And she offered the Morlocks safe haven in the X-Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, only when there's peace between humans and mutants will we come to live in your nice, safe mansion in the middle of... like the forest.
Yeah.
Instead, we'll keep living in the sewer.
Right.
So the X-Men just kind of leave them.
It's
in
like,
their
all right, you made your choice.
Yeah, you made your choice. So the Morlocks are left to their sewer games.
Right.
Although we have seen in following episodes, many Morlocks make appearances. They do try to surface a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And they either like get, you know, batted back down into the sewers or harassed by the Friends of Humanity. Whatever the case might be.
Right.
But anyway, Callisto is, like, mumbling about how she wants to reclaim the true leader of the Morlocks. And she reveals that whatever the leech has leads to some, like, hidden alien power buried somewhere deep in the subways of New York City, or the caves of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about that in a minute. So, the Reavers are in hot pursuit of this leech, and they come to fight the Morlocks. The Morlocks, you know, they're similar to the X-Men. They've got powers, but they're not quite as good. And the Reavers dispatch them pretty easily. They've got these guns that shoot these glowing, like, yellow and green nets at people.
Mm-hmm. And it, like, traps them against a wall. It's like a sticky, charged net or something.
And it's kind of like it's displayed as a sort of terrifying weapon, mm-hmm. in a way, because the people trapped get, like, they fall unconscious,
mm-hmm.
or something. It completely immobilizes them.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that, like, that's kind of a nice alternative to a gun if a police officer had that.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously that can be abused by a corrupt police force. They could just capture people and, you know, haul them away to God knows where. But at the same time, it's better to be sort of
immobilized
and shot dead.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
So the Reavers employing some nice semi-non-violent weaponry. Although they're played off to be supposed to be really, you know, scary and terrifying.
Yeah, well, non-lethal weaponry.
Right, non-lethal. Okay, that's a good way of putting it. So the Morlocks are completely, you know, knocked out of commission by the Reavers. They're sort of Spider-Man to the wall, let's say, of the subways. Lady Deathstrike and the Reavers realize that, well, they get it out of Leech. He says, oh, there's some alien magic or something, and deep in the caves, it's going to make us really rich. Or give us lots of power. One of the two things. Oh, and this is where we meet Lady Deathstrike.
Yeah.
So she's the main villain of this episode. She's this hideously deformed Asian woman. I guess Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
She's definitely Japanese. And she's got a long, complex backstory, which will be sort of revealed in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Less emphasis on the complex, because, like all backstories in the animated series, it's a little more...
It's glazed over a little bit, but just, you know, to kind of keep things moving.
Right,
so, like, nothing too bad about that. But she is, like...
Yeah, how would you describe this woman?
If you don't know her backstory, if you're watching this for the first time, like, her fingers look like tree branches, sort of.
Sort of like Edward Scissorhands without... Edward Scissorhands.
Well, they're blades, but they're not drawn as, like, metallic. They're drawn as these, like, tan-colored, like, long, tapered
fingers. As if the skin
fingers.
Is, like, over them, which
is
gross.
Really gross, yeah.
And she's got the cybernetic, like, splotch marks all over her body.
Right.
That have become a trademark of the show.
Right.
Like, this weird...
It's like they have computer chips embedded in the skin.
Right. And there's something going on. I wonder if it's in her weird red hair as well. She's got this sort of Raggedy Ann, like, red hair.
Yeah, it's, like, plaited, not braided, but, like...
Right.
Like
there's, like, weird, like, rectangles connecting the sections.
Yeah.
Red rectangle. I just find that bizarre. She looks, like, horrible, like, from a nightmare.
Yeah.
Like a Lovecraftian nightmare or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she is, you know, quite a villain of renown in the X-Men comics. She appears in the... X-Men 2, the movie, her backstory completely changed and different.
And also,
a wordless
look is totally different.
Yeah, yeah. She looks better in the movie than she does as a comic book and a cartoon character.
Mm-hmm.
She looks a little more normal. In the movie, when she extends her adamantium blades out of her fingers, they come out of her fingernails.
It's like claws, basically.
Right, and she could retract them, so she could appear normal at
this
times.
This is, like, much more dramatic. It's like she would never...
She's like a monster.
She can't tie shoelaces, for sure.
I know, how does she
or,
eat?
Or, like, tap I guess on she a could computer or stuff. A phone or something.
Right,
like,
yeah.
None of these devices...
And she seems really, as we'll see later, she's really into her own transformation, which is, I guess that's like body positive, but still, I don't know, I can't get with it.
Yeah, well.
And her name, Lady Deathstrike, this is why, you know, when it came to reading about the Reavers and Lady Deathstrike and catching some backstory, my eyes glazed over a little bit. I've just always hated Lady Deathstrike as a character. I hate the name. I just don't, I just don't care about her, and it's from a history of X-Men comics that's kind of around the time when it's kind of where I stopped with reading the X-Men continuity of comics.
Mm.
I've told the story before, but I once bought in a lonely, depressed summer when I was like 22. I bought this DVD that had every Uncanny X-Men starting with number one in 1962, and it went up to like through the 90s. I think maybe it stopped at like 2000. And it was when I got to the 90s that I like lost interest. You know, I read like deeply the 60s, 70s, and 80s ones. Like those were great. But then by the 90s, there's a noticeable dip in quality. And also the franchise of X-Men had went in divergent paths. So this collection only collected Uncanny X-Men, which was the original series. So at a certain point, there's all these other comics like New Mutants and X-Force and Excalibur and just plain X-Men and stuff like that. So this thing didn't have those. So they would say like at the end of an issue, like, oh, continued in New Mutants 22 or continued in X-Men 11. Whatever it might be. So it's like, you know, and this is, it was like harder to like keep going through the 90s. You couldn't follow the same story. And that was a little disappointing. I wonder if there's a collection now that like really collects everything. Probably an illegal torrent or something. But I've lost it. You know, I don't care. You know, that was like, I had gotten my taste of like full X-Men indoctrination. So, and then like I always mentioned that, the quality picks up again when Grant Morrison reinvents the franchise in the early 2000s. And that's around the same time when the movies come out, too. So, whatever. That's the X-Men, my X-Men history backstory there. repeat it again, just to remind people. All right. So, anyway, what happens is Lady Deathstrike and her team, they go to this, they find this alien ship buried deep in the caves underneath the subway system, I guess.
Right.
In New York.
Which I don't think exists in. Well, obviously the alien ship doesn't exist, but I mean, I don't think there are really caves like that.
Well, I mean, they certainly exist in movies and TV shows. Like,
yeah, well, there's subway tunnels, like man-made, like.
I know, but I'm just saying that, like, I'm just thinking of movies like National Treasure. Uh-huh. They find these, like, secret underground caves in New York City.
Yeah.
You know, there's always, like, you know, in Ghostbusters 2.
Right.
They go underneath the subways and find, like, the River of Slime.
That does exist, not the River of Slime, but those caves do exist underneath Paris. There's catacombs were dug in, you know, before medieval times or whatever.
Right.
That, you know, or you can still enter today, like caves, but.
Well, any New York City spelunkers out there, let us know if you could just, like, walk down the subway, go through a subway tunnel, and, like, make a left and walk through a series of underground caves and bunkers. Because we'll meet you there. We'll have a picnic.
You go ahead.
Okay, you're not going to come with me on that?
All right, anyway. Imagining the smell.
Right. So, Lady Deathstrike, she sees this alien spaceship, and she slashes at it with her deformed hand claws, which, like we said, made of adamantium.
Yeah.
And she, like, electrocutes herself, and a blinding, crazy power wave of green energy emerges from this spaceship and covers all of New York City, and then out into the outer boroughs and out into Westchester, New York, which is sort of above New York City.
Right, and where it sweeps over Professor X.
Yeah,
and he freaks out.
He has an epileptic fit where he's like, power! Incredible power!
Yeah.
It's a really intense scene.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of intense acting. So, but, like, the ship remains impenetrable. So, because of this, and Lady Deathstrike knows she can't slash at it, because I guess her body's connected to her claws, and so she has a scheme where she uses Leech to send the video message to the X-Men. Like we said, they were playing basketball shirtless, the X-Mansion, to get them to come down to...
Well, she doesn't want all of them. She wants Wolverine,
because
she knows about his adamantium claws.
She thinks that for some reason he'll be able to slash at the machine and not get hurt by it. I'm not sure why.
No, that's not it. I thought it was that she knows that, like, continuing to slash at it could release its power, but exactly, it would kill the person who was doing it.
Right.
So she's like, all right, Wolverine has the same power as me. Let him die instead of me slashing this thing open.
You know, it seems that, like, she's cleared out the Morlocks. No one knows about this alien ship. There might be a better way to open this thing. Like, you've got this team of cyborg people helping you. You know, go get some crazier high-powered weapons or welding tools or dynamite and just blast it a few times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to go get an X-Man to immediately jump and stop what he's doing. Like, who knows what... She doesn't know what he's doing or where he is. I guess she knows he's an X-Man, so...
Yeah.
To get... I mean, that's just, like, kind of a bizarre scheme on her end. But
I mean, where there's a will, there's a way. So she's like, she's found her thing that she's going to do. A little also perplexing to me is that she is able to use Leech and the Morlocks to, like, help her with this plan. And why do the Morlocks in 1992 have a video phone that's, like...
I don't think the Morlocks do. I think the Reavers must have one.
Because they're they've got advanced technologically technology. Advanced, yeah.
Yeah, but okay. I guess Leech knows the phone number.
Right, okay, that's where Leech comes in. Yeah. Got it.
So they say... To lure Wolverine, they say... Leech says, "Oh, Yuriko's looking for you," and that triggers an intense emotional flashback for Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
So we again jump into the Wolverine flashback machine, and we see in like a snowy Japanese village that he had a girlfriend named Yuriko.
He used to live in Japan,
right? Yeah, a beautiful Japanese woman who seemed, you know, just like a typical lady, nothing too unique about her. But he's called away in a special Canadian Secret Services mission with his old pal Maverick, who we've seen in other wordless cameos on the show many times.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in Canada somewhere, you know, in like a helicopter, attack helicopter with the Canadian flag on it. That's always funny to see the Canadian secret military in action.
Mm-hmm.
It happens a lot in the X-Men world. And they're fighting just some like weird, like, goon army. They're blasting a bunch of lasers at Wolverine. Wolverine runs into the jungle and he falls into a pit of grass, right? Mm-hmm. Like a grass covered pit. Yeah, a trap, a basic trap.
Yeah,
and he's surrounded. So he,
basic.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's trapped. And then they connect it with scenes we've seen in a previous episode, I believe, Repo Man. The first look at Wolverine's origin in the show.
Right.
You weren't there for that episode, but it was the one where Wolverine goes to...
Well, I mean, I've seen it.
Right, yeah. Well, just reminding everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wolverine goes to Canada and meets Alpha Flight, who's trying to capture him and make him rejoin their mutant team. So in that episode, we saw the flashback of Wolverine was captured by the scientists, and they gave him his adamantium skeleton. So we see that in animation again. But the twist is, and Wolverine promised to return to Yuriko. There's the whole, like,
right,
love angle.
Right, love.
Yeah. But the twist was that the scientist who put who gave Wolverine his adamantium skeleton was Yuriko's father, and that Wolverine inadvertently killed him when he escaped the Weapon X plant. Because he blows it up, you know.
Right. He goes around, like, slashing all the machines because he's got these new claws and
right.
He's pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
And makes the machines blow up and that's what kills
Like I've said in the Repo Man episode, the original Weapon X comic is a lot more gory and bloody than what you get in the X-Men animated series.
Mm.
If you want to see what... I recommend everyone picking it up. Barry Windsor-Smith. Smith's take on the Wolverine origin, where they presented as him, he was just some guy that they captured, like at a bar, Wolverine. They must have known he was a mutant.
Yeah.
They capture him and they give him the skeleton and they turn him into this horrible weapon. But instead of the factory or the secret experimental science plant being staffed by robot guards, they're staffed by humans.
Mm-hmm.
And Wolverine slaughters like 1,000 of them and leaves them in a huge bloody pyramid. And there's horrible violence in it.
Whoa.
Yeah, so this is like the way PG rated version,
right?
Even and that, you know, I would even say that the X-Men movies present a PG version compared to what the comics show.
Hmm.
So you know, you'll need a real like maniac to direct the real Weapon X movie one day. It'll be like a real horror film.
Ooh.
Yeah, because Wolverine's like completely nude in it too. Anyway, so that's, you know, so we get a glimpse of Wolverine's, like, skeleton history again, and Yuriko, it turned out, you know, her father was inadvertently killed by Wolverine, and Yuriko seeks revenge on Wolverine, so she meets the Reavers and transforms herself into Lady Deathstrike. And I just thought it was a funny scene when they show her get in this machine that changes her.
Because
mm-hmm. when she gets out, she's so hideously deformed.
Yeah, but she's so happy.
Yeah, she's like really pleased with the results.
Gross.
It's like couldn't you have done something where she could have had retractable claws too? You know, give her
right.
something a little more human.
That's what made me like think about whether the Reavers were actually mutants or not, or just cyborg people or what. Because like, is she? a mutant?
I think she's just a cyborg. You know, in the comics, there's a lot going on too. She gets transformed in the comics, but there's, I think that character Spiral, there's something's going on with the Mojo universe too, with Lady Deathstrike.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's lots of complex backstory. I trust one of our Facebook fans to post it if they care to, Arthur or something.
Somebody who knows some stuff, yeah. Yeah,
Arthur, Tom, or Adam, you know, whoever wants to bother to explain it.
Knows about this, yeah.
It just never interested me, so.
I mean, fair enough. It's just that, like, they chose Wolverine for the adamantium skeleton because he has mutant healing powers.
Right.
So now she supposedly has an adamantium skeleton because that's what her claws are made out of. Mm-hmm. So
how'd she survive?
Right. It stands to reason that she must also have some kind of crazy healing powers.
I would guess that the technology was a bit more advanced at this point. It wasn't quite as violent.
Uh-huh.
So they were able to put it in her in a way where she was able to survive.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think she's a mutant, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, it's just it's a little more advanced cybernetic technology.
All right, okay.
It looks like she had to make certain sacrifices to her body for this to happen. Maybe what they did is they just cut her arms off or her forearms, uh-huh, and then just replace them with cybernetic implants. So, you know, you could survive that kind of, like, horrible surgery.
I guess.
I mean, yeah. I mean, well, you know, it's sci-fi surgery.
All right. Anyway, so she transforms. She's
right. So she's like, right. And then so Wolverine tells Gambit and Jubilee not to follow him. Of course, they do secretly. There's a funny scene where Wolverine goes to before he goes down to the subway tunnels. He just drives up in his Jeep in his costume, and he's in a rush. And he has an angry look on his face. But as he gets out of his car, people flee in terror when they see him. He doesn't have his claws popped. He's just wearing his bright, like, banana-colored outfit. And people really flee when they see him. I don't know if they've seen him on the news and they know who he is, or they're just... I mean, he parks very abruptly. Maybe he just...
I don't think that's the reason. He just looks like a maniac.
Yeah, he does.
He's
look
got this costume and he's just running at full force down the subway steps.
He's very, like, muscular too. Yeah, it'd be terrifying to see, like, a 5'5" bodybuilder.
It's
man.
Probably, like, more alarming if you haven't seen him on the news, because just like, what the fuck is this?
You might think he's just like a weird wrestler, though. I mean, it's New York City. I think if I saw someone in the Wolverine costume on the subway, and let's say you don't know, there's Wolverine costumes on a thing, right?
Yeah.
I think you would just think, oh, that's a weird professional wrestler guy.
Yeah, but if he was running in your direction, you would just get out of the way.
But you wouldn't flee in terror.
I might.
The people flee in terror.
Anyway.
Because later, Gambit and Jubilee follow, and they're running too, but people aren't afraid, but they're just startled by them running so fast, like they're in their way.
I don't know, kind of a boring detail to me.
Well, this episode, not the most exciting episode in the X-Men canon here.
All right. We're getting warmed up, that's
all. Yeah, and we'll talk about that near the end of here, too, about our thoughts here. So Wolverine goes into the tunnels. He's ambushed by the Reavers. He's confronted with Lady Deathstrike, who reveals that she's Yuriko and that she's seeking revenge on him. He's really shocked and stunned by all this. And they capture Wolverine with one of those net things, and Lady Deathstrike just wants to kill him right away. But the Reavers want to keep Wolverine alive to have him open up the alien ship because they're just after money.
Wait, I thought that was her plan.
It was, but she's too consumed with revenge in the moment.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's forced to keep Wolverine alive, even though she has so much bloodlust for him. And even though in the moment, too, he tries to explain that he didn't kill her father, at least intentionally.
Like, not on purpose.
She's not listening to any of that.
Right.
Her mind's not open to like, you know, she's like, I've transformed my body into a hideous monster. It doesn't matter.
For this purpose and this alone.
It doesn't even matter if you saved his life and he's alive at this point. Like, we're doing this. And so they drag Wolverine to the alien spaceship through these dark, mysterious caves in New York City. And, you know, they set Wolverine loose because they want him to open the ship. But you don't set Wolverine loose because he's going to take you on no matter how many there are. So they fight again. Gambit and Jubilee show up too. They join in the fight. It's a pretty back-and-forth fight. It looks like the X-Men are going to win. But at the end, Gambit sort of gets electrocuted. Jubilee gets captured. And then Yuriko gets knocked into the spaceship, and as she does, she starts to be electrocuted. And Wolverine, who still feels compassion and sympathy for her, he slashes at the ship to set her free.
Right.
And that unleashes more power, which Professor X, you know, he's now monitoring on Cerebro the whole situation.
Right, because he wants to know what the source of the power is.
Yeah, and he realizes he can translate some alien writing. He sees it's a warning, and he's really freaked out.
Well, the warning is do not open the ship, because exactly. there's a lethal predator inside, right?
It's like, way to park it on our planet, aliens.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I know. It's, like, weird to me that both Lady Deathstrike and Wolverine have the same impulse to slash at the outside of this ship. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that? Like, you would never do that to a normal, like, aircraft. You know what I mean? Like, why?
Like, trying to find, like, a button or a latch or something?
Yeah, right. It's it's an aircraft. It's got to have, like, an actual opening. You don't need to, like...
It's clearly protected by some green energy force field.
I guess so.
So there is something going on there.
It just seems, like, really weird to me. Like, first she, you know, in the middle of the episode there, she goes up to it and just, like, starts slashing at the outside.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? But then Wolverine has the same impulse, minutes later.
He thinks she's sort of attached to the ship as she's being electrocuted, so he's trying to free her in some weird way. So
but then, like, he's touching it too, so shouldn't he, like, get electrocuted?
That's what I brought up earlier. I said it seems like he should be conducting electricity himself.
Yeah,
but that doesn't seem to be the case. So then,
anyway, but it works though. Like, she gets free,
and the ship opens up, and there's this hideous, like, green smiling monster face coming out.
Right,
and that's the end of the episode.
We'll see more next time.
Yeah. So if you got a vibe, we would have loved to ring in season 3, the first episode of it, with a lot more, like, excitement. But this is...
I mean, I am excited to get season 3 started.
Yeah, me too,
just
definitely.
Like,
season 3 is great.
Like,
trust us.
Watch this first episode. There's, like, I don't know what.
It's not one of the stronger X-Men episodes. Animation's wonky. The plot line, it's a little ham-fisted. Another Wolverine backstory plot line.
Ham-fisted?
Ham-fisted.
Ham-fisted,
yeah.
Right.
A little bit of a ham-fisted. Yeah, and weird that so few X-Men are featured in it, and, you know, not one of my favorites. I don't know. What do you think?
Watchable. I was entertained. I guess because I haven't seen this episode that many times, so it was a little bit more fresh than some of the other ones. I was, like, willing to stick with it, you know? Plus, it's a 2-episode arc, so there's promise of more... come next.
It definitely pays off more in the next episode, as we'll find out. It's more... there's more X-Men. There's more... The stakes are raised very high. And it's got a pretty interesting... It's a pretty, like, scary episode, I should say. The monster that's revealed is pretty menacing and terrifying and real nightmarish.
Yeah.
So... But the setup episode... Not as great.
There's really a lot of biotechnology going on in this X-Men universe between, like, Mr. Sinister and all his weird goopy objects, and now this live spaceship that they're slashing at. Yeah. Like,
well, the X-Men, you just mentioned two
cyborgs.
Cyborgs, DNA, genetic experimentation, like human evolution, and also outer space stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the X-Men really go to
hasn't been too much of that yet.
Right. It's definitely... But that's where they all lead with the X-Men. They run out of storylines.
That's the science part of science fiction, right?
What do you mean?
The outer space stuff and, like, the biomorphic technology and, like...
Yeah.
I mean, it's sci-fi, so...
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the X-Men get more science fiction-y as they go along. They start off being, like, a weird parable to racism and hatred in society and stuff, but then it branches off into more extreme adventures as they carry on. Well, that's all I have to say about this episode. You know... not terrible, but not good.
you really chose those words carefully, didn't you?
I mean, I love the show. I can't be too hard on it. I realize there's going to be bad episodes. I realize this is not some masterpiece. But, the charm of the show still is with me very strongly. Mm-hmm. I love all the characters. I love the X-Men in general. So I'm perfectly willing to sit through some stinkers to get to the good stuff.
Okay.
And there's a lot of good stuff in season 3.
Yeah, true.
So stay tuned.
Right. Right. Look forward to that, everybody.
Right. And we'll be here.
And we are too.
Yeah. So I just want to remind people, most importantly, to take some time out of your day if you can, if you enjoy the show, to go onto the iTunes review section for our podcast, rate us 5 stars, and leave a nice review.
Yeah, it goes a long way for visibility.
Apparently, yeah, that's big in the iTunes, like, charts algorithm or something. So we want this show to get out to as many X-Men fans as possible and cartoon fans. So if you've been enjoying the show, just please take your time and do that. I guess, you know, I don't know if it works with other podcast services. I know our fans, you know, they also use Stitcher. They use, like, other Android apps. Like, whatever method you use, if they have a review system, please give us a nice review. Please do that for us. It really helps. And we appreciate everyone that's done it and that continues to listen. We love you all. Beyond that, also follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. That's a little less important. I don't tweet that much. I just like stuff, you know, mainly that people other people post. I do want to give another endless amount of shout-outs to at X-Men Tass. They're the writers Eric and Julia Leewald, who have been on our show before. Listen to that episode if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. They were writers on the show and producers. They always usually give us a nice retweet to their much larger tweeting fan base. So thank you to them. Also, Facebook. Join the X-Men Tass podcast Facebook group. You can interact with us. You can join the group. We'll talk to you. You could broadcast your thoughts to us. We'll respond. And as usual, we appreciate everyone interacting in that community. Some nice thoughts on our last episode where we talked about the X-Men movie. It gives us a lot of encouragement to keep doing the movies as well, mm-hmm. as we trundle along here. Sonia, do you have any last words for the start, our intrepid start of season 3?
You've said more than enough words. Thank you.
Oh. You have nothing else to contribute.
Done.
Okay, we're done too. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Goodbye. Oh, and watch Aussie Gold Hunters on Netflix.